Welcome into the NHL at the Rink podcast. As always, Dan Rosen here, and the great, the wonderful, the almighty with the greatest hair of all time, Sean Rourke, on the other end. How are you, Sean?
I'm great. The appointment's been made, by the way.
Okay, good.
The hair is being cut, the beard will be shaved, and then we'll start it all over again for playoffs.
That's fine.
There'll be a two-week moratorium on the hair.
Not going to recognize you. No, I haven't seen you in, other than virtually, in forever, but not going to recognize you when we do this next if you get the hair and the beard cut.
It's all going to be gone. 2.5 all the way around. I'm a barber's dream.
They better have a broom. That's all I got to say, because it's going to be a lot to sweep up. Anyway, we got a good podcast here. Obviously, the playoff races are heating up, and we've got John Hines from the Nashville Predators, coach, who will be joining us shortly. They're obviously right in the thick of the race there in the Discover Central Division, and John Hines has always been one of my favorite coaches to deal with. A great talker, honest, forthcoming, says what's on his mind. So hopefully that interview will, you know, we have a lot to break down in that race with the Predators and the Stars going after that spot, that fourth spot in that race. So a lot to talk about there. But first, Sean, the Vegas Golden Knights, we talked about them a lot already on this podcast throughout the season, but that's a tank, man. They're just a tank rolling downhill right now. 10 wins in a row. And, you know, I mean, they just beat Colorado 5-2. Yeah, Devin Dubnyk was in net, not Philip Grubauer. We'll touch on that in a little bit. But, man, I mean, who's beating the Vegas Golden Knights right now?
It's hard to say, but, you know, the one thing I worry a little bit about is peaking early, right? And you wonder about that. But I do think that they're stating a case. You know, when you look at that game last night, and 10 seconds in, they're up 1-0. Yeah, you know, they just have that killer instinct. Like, you give them an opportunity, and they have so much skill. You know, it's William Karlsson that does it. It's not Stone. It's not Pacioretty. It's not any of those guys that, you know, you would think. And just, you know, pretty much puts their foot on their neck right away and says, you know, hey, now come back from this. And Colorado did. They made it 1-1. And then, you know, Vegas just overwhelmed them. And they do it in so many ways. They can be physical. They can be fast. They can out-goaltend you with either of their goalies. You know, they can suffocate the neutral zone. They're a nightmare.
It never felt like Colorado was in the game, even though they tied the game, that game Wednesday night. It just never felt like they were in it. And you touched on the goaltending. And, you know, we talk about these things, right? The biggest difference between Colorado and Vegas is they battle here. And by the way, toss Minnesota in, obviously. They did lose to St. Louis, but they've been very good, obviously. Just had a 7-game winning streak end. But Marc-Andre Fleury, 5-0, a .943 save percentage and a shutout in this 10-game winning streak. Robin Lehner, 5-0, a .928 save percentage and a shutout in this winning streak. Meanwhile, you look on the other side, if it's not Philip Grubauer, the Avalanche are not winning, basically. You know, and that's the biggest problem. They went out and got Devin Dubnyk, but he hasn't been very good. You know, Jonas Johansson, he hasn't been very good. They need Philip Grubauer. There is no margin for error with Colorado, but with Vegas, I mean, Peter DeBoer, I'm going to play Fleury tonight. Okay, we'll win. I'm going to play Lehner tonight. All right, no problem. We'll win. It's really such a luxury to have if you're Peter DeBoer.
Well, it's a luxury to have until you get to the playoffs.
Well, yes.
And then,
I knew you were going to say that.
And then it's a nightmare that played out last year, right? Marc-Andre Fleury wanted to play. He didn't get to play. He thought he was being stabbed in the back, or his agent thought he was being stabbed in the back, at least. But... I mean, how many times have we said, you know, you need a goalie? I understand it's nice to have that guy. It's nice to have Yaroslav Halak when Tuukka Rask doesn't have a good night to say, oh, well, we're going to put him in and, you know, maybe we give Tuukka 1-game rest. But Tuukka always knows that he's the guy. You know, if he's healthy, he's going to be the guy. There's a clear cut one, and then you can argue it's a 1A. Although in Boston, you can now argue that Jeremy Swayman's the 1A, yeah. And we can talk about that a little bit later. You know, that's not the case here. Like, what do you do? Like, A, you have to pick a goalie to start the playoffs. I don't think you continue a rotation, which is what they've been doing almost religiously when both goalies are healthy. And then you pick one, you know, and what do you do after that? you know, is it a short leash? Is it a long leash? I think sometimes, you know, we look at it as a luxury, and it certainly is in the fact that you know what you're going to get with either goalie, but it's a psychological minefield.
Why can't they rotate in the playoffs? Honestly, like, why can't they do it? It would keep both guys fresh. You know you're getting quality goaltending. It would keep both guys into it, right? Not one guy's getting bag skated or just going on the ice with the scratches to take some shots. They're both into it. Why can't they do it? I mean, we never see it done. I get that. It's not something that's prevalent in the NHL. But in this situation, when you have the two number clear-cut number ones, I don't see why Peter DeBoer can't do it, at least to try it out at the beginning of the playoffs, see if it works. Why wouldn't it work? You have two really good goalies. So if I'm Peter DeBoer, I'm thinking to myself, hey, I mean, I can continue right along with this trend that we're going with into the playoffs. It's working. Why would I stop?
Well, maybe that's a question we have to ask John Hines, because he's got two pretty good goalies in Saros and Rene. But I think the reason that goalies don't do that, coaches don't do it, is A, they like to be comfortable and they like some sort of certainty. And then B, you know, you look at that situation and let's say you do that, right? And Fleury starts and he wins, and then Lehner starts and he's like DeGrom for the Mets and he loses 1-0 and makes 45 saves.
Yeah, to bring up DeGrom, really.
And then Fleury plays again and he wins. And then Lehner plays and he makes 42 saves and they lose 2-1. And then what do you do in game six? Now it's 3-2 or 2-3 either way. And you've set this precedence of I'm going to alternate. And Lehner's done nothing to lose his spot, but the other guy's won all the games. And you're maybe facing the end of your season or forcing a game seven that you don't want to see. And then what do you do? So I think that's part of the problem. I think the easiest thing to do is to say, this is my guy until he's not my guy anymore. And, you know, I mean, we've seen plenty of situations where the guy who ended up being the guy didn't start the playoffs, and Holtby,
Holtby's the obvious one,
was one of those guys. You know, and maybe that happens, but I think I would fall off my podcasting chair if Peter DeBoer came out and said, you know what we're going to do in the first round of the playoffs against either St. Louis or Arizona is we're going to alternate our goalies.
Well, I'm just saying he has the goalies to do it with. So I'd be surprised if he does it as well, but we'll see what happens there. How about you bring up Arizona, St. Louis? Let's touch on that a little bit. The Blues, to me, last night, Wednesday night, coming back the way they did against Minnesota, scoring with less than a minute to go to win the game. That was a team that said, this is ours. We're taking it. And Arizona is now 2-8 in their last 10 games. They're a team, to me, that's saying, we're not quite good enough to go ahead and take this. Whereas St. Louis played like, you know, has that championship mentality still. Ryan O'Reilly's been terrific. Binnington's been terrific. And they're a team right now, to me, that says, we're going out. We're taking this thing. Give us fourth. We'll take fourth place in this division, and we're going to take our best shot at whoever we're playing, you know, in the first round, because we have a championship mentality. And that is a scary proposition. I know we're talking about Vegas and who's beating them right now, but if you are the first place team in that division, that's a scary proposition to be playing St. Louis in the first round.
Yeah. If Colton Parayko's healthy, then it's a scary proposition. Look, I think as an opponent, you never want to play against a recent champion, and I know I never want to play against a team that has Ryan O'Reilly on it. Mm-hmm. You know what he did the other day against Colorado in that Sunday game, you know, that was a great advertisement for what this sport can be and what it is in the playoffs. You know, they go down 2-0 to Colorado and you're like, oh my God, like literally nobody wants this spot. Nobody wants to play Vegas. They just rather go home. And then Ryan O'Reilly pretty much on his own, you know, just dragged St. Louis into the battle and said, we're going to win. And, you know, I, the year that they won the cup, and this will be a memory that I have for as long as I cover hockey, and when I'm sitting around in my Adirondack chair in the backyard after I retire, was at the All-Star game, you know, the year that they won the cup, they were, you know, they had been awful. Berube was brought in as the replacement coach. And Ryan O'Reilly said, we're going to make the playoffs. Like, we're going to win. Like, this is what I believe and this is what I know. And I'm not shy about saying it. And we're going to figure it out. And it wasn't whistling by the graveyard. I mean, players do that all the time. This was an earnest, you're stupid. Like, of course we're going to make the playoffs. And here's why. You know, and it's not the first time I've been stupid, but, you know, and then he backed it up. And he's that type of player. And, you know, when you have players like that in your lineup, and St. Louis has a few of them, they're a dangerous opponent. And I think, you know, whether it's Vegas, which it looks like it's going to be, or Colorado, both those teams know that they're playing an opponent that's not going to be 22, 24 points worse than the Vegas Golden Knights or the Colorado Avalanche.
Yeah, I mean, look no further than their goaltender for the guy who has that mentality, right? I mean, there was a couple of weeks ago, and it wasn't even that, maybe a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, when he was asked about their push here in the playoffs, and Jordan Binnington goes, we're coming, you know, and now he's backing it up too. And that's the confidence. That guy's exuded confidence since the moment he stepped foot onto the National Hockey League ice. And you want that in your goaltender. There's no question about it. So they're pushing. Plus, they got three games in hand on Arizona. They got a 3-point lead and three games in hand. And the Coyotes are playing the way they are playing right now. It's the Blues to lose last night to me. The way they came back proved to me that they're ready to go win that fourth spot. So that's what we're likely going to see as a first round matchup between St. Louis and Vegas. And it'll be fun. That we talk a lot about the 2-3 type of matchups, Sean, and the 1-4s maybe don't look as hot, but the 1-4 in that, you know, in that division, and the 1-4 in the East could be really, really good. And it could be in the Central as well. We'll see. But what about the North, right? Let's, as we switch gears here to the North, I'm still mystified by what's going on in this division outside of Toronto and maybe Edmonton. Now Winnipeg's lost 5 in a row, and now they don't have Nick Ehlers either. And they can't beat the Oilers. They're 2-7 against the Oilers this season, the team they're probably going to play in the first round. Does Montreal want it? Vancouver had an opportunity, a lot of games. They're losing to Ottawa. You know, Calgary's not really hitting, and they don't, okay, you know, they don't really want it either. The whole division is kind of mystifying, as I say again, me. I don't understand I know Nick Ehlers' injury hurts the Jets, but 5 losses in a row shocks me with the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, well, Connor Hellebuyck hasn't been good, and he's the key for them. He makes them go, you know, pulled twice. Players have been benched. Like, Paul Maurice is trying to wake this team up.
And, yeah,
you know, he certainly woke Connor Hellebuyck up, but it didn't pay benefits. You know, like, I love Connor Hellebuyck, and I, you know, you talk about confident goalies, and you talk about Binnington, and there's nobody more confident than Connor Hellebuyck. And, you know, he's like, I didn't deserve to be pulled. I could have won that game. Like, what are you doing? You know, and then he goes out and he has another stinker. So I think that's a huge part of it. And I just think at times in this season, when you see teams so often, they get in your head, you know, and my God, it's the Edmonton Oilers. And it's, you know, we have to have a whole conversation when we finish with Winnipeg and maybe dissect Montreal a little bit, you know, about Connor McDavid and what he's doing. It's almost unprecedented. But I think that Edmonton's a little bit in their head. I think their speed causes some difficulties for a Winnipeg defense that's by committee. I think when you have to match up the way you have to match up against Edmonton, that I don't know if Winnipeg's deep enough. Either amongst their D, elite D, you know, who's that guy that you say, I'm really confident when I put this guy out against McDavid that I have a fighting chance. I don't know who it is. And then, you know, I always thought that Winnipeg was a responsible defensive team amongst its forwards. That has not shown in the last few games. So the wheels seem to be coming off a little bit, and there's some smoke coming out of the engine. But with all that said, I will never, ever bet against Paul Maurice in a 7-game series against anybody. Like, I just think that he finds ways to get the matchups he wants. And I know I just said, I don't know who you match up against Connor McDavid. I think you almost at that point have to say, I'm going to let that guy do whatever he's going to do, and I need to win every other matchup, and that's how I have a fighting chance. And then I need Connor Hellebuck to, you know, make 18 saves where I just say, oh my God, I can't believe that just happened. But I think out of all the coaches in that division, Paul Maurice is head and shoulders above all of them.
Well, I'm not a betting man, certainly not on the NHL, but I would bet against Paul Maurice in this situation. And it's not betting against Paul Maurice. It's betting against the Jets, and it has nothing necessarily, I think, to do. It's not a knock on Paul Maurice. They can't beat the Oilers. They can't stop Connor McDavid. Nobody can. It's ridiculous. The guy could get 100 points in a 56-game season. That's what he's on pace for right now. He gets three a night. It's absolutely insane, right? We haven't seen anything like this since Mario Lemieux and Jaromir Jagr. What is that now? How many years ago?
20 years.
25. It was 95, 96, wasn't it? So, I mean, something along those lines. 20, 25 years, whatever it is. It's once in a generation type of thing that we're seeing right now from Connor McDavid. But beyond that, their D can't match up. And you flip it around with the Oilers. Darnell Nurse is terrific. He has really stepped up his game. Tyson Barrie has been really good. The Oilers, the knock on them was their defense, you know, and now it's not anymore. The knock on them was their goaltending. It's not anymore. And I don't even, with this series, in this particular series, if it's Edmonton, Winnipeg, I don't even think depth scoring is going to matter for Edmonton because Connor McDavid gets 3-4 points a night. So what's the difference? They're going to score 3 or 4 goals and the Jets can't stop him. I don't know who can. You may need 6 Victor Hedmans on the ice to stop Connor McDavid to be able to do it. But the series has been so one-sided in the regular season. And like you said, you're going to get into somebody's head. And now you see him in the first round of the playoffs too. I don't know how you flip that switch if you're Winnipeg, even if you get Nick Ehlers back for the start of the playoffs, which they may or may not do happen. But I don't see how Winnipeg can flip that switch against this particular team. It's the worst opponent they could face.
It may well be. I look at 7-game series as different, right? And especially if you can, as the visiting team, if you can take one game out of those first two, you can change the whole narrative. You know, I will go back in case anybody didn't listen, and I'm sure everybody did. We'll go back to Shane Doan, right? Last week, he talked about this very thing, right? When you're on the wrong side of momentum, you're squeezing your stick, you don't know what to do, you don't have any answers, and then it just switches. And then the other team squeezing their stick and doing all those things. And you're sky high in confidence, right? Like, let's not forget that the Edmonton Oilers earlier this year played the Toronto Maple Leafs and scored 1 goal in 3 games. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't by Connor McDavid or Dreisaitl. So there's clearly ways to do it. And if there are ways to do it, like I said, if I were going to take any coach out of that division, it would be Paul Maurice to figure out how to do it. And I think it's a long play. Like, I don't think Winnipeg walks in and wins that series 4-1. I think they win it in a game 7 and they've just beaten on the Edmonton Oilers legally, played heavy and wore them down physically and mentally to the point where they can get to a coin flip game 7.
We'll see. I don't know. I don't see it, but that's why they play the games, right?
Exactly.
So, you wanted to touch on Montreal too, so let's do that real fast. We do have John Hines coming up shortly. You wanted to hit on Montreal. This is a team that hasn't won back-to-back games in almost a month now. It's a lot of win one, lose two. They're no better with Dom Ducharme as their coach than they were with Claude Julien as their coach. And now Jonathan Drouin's out on a leave of absence. You know, they just lose 4-1 against Toronto, the team that they are likely to face in the first round if Montreal makes it. Do you give them any chance?
I give them less chance than I give Winnipeg. It just seems like they're done, right? There's nothing. There's no gas left in that tank. And they at the beginning of the year
they were awesome.
You were leading the parade. You had your baton and your pom-poms and your whistle. And you were high-stepping down the street talking about how Montreal is a Stanley Cup contender. You know, Marc Bergevin's going to be GM of the year.
They're disappointing.
But I don't know that they are. They are, right? Look, it doesn't help that Carey Price is out in concussion protocol. But they're not deep, as you said they were. They've proven that over time. And look, let's not be disingenuous. They were dealt a really bad hand. You know, they had a COVID outbreak like a lot of teams did, and a lot of teams that did haven't survived it for whatever reason, you know, whether it's the compressed schedule, whether it's, you know, residual effects coming out of it, whatever it might be. But their depth's been tested. They've had to dip well into their farm system, and now they're at the point where they have no recalls left. So I don't even know how they get out of this. They can't rest anybody, and they can't seem to figure out how to stop the bleeding.
Yeah, no, you're right on that. No question about it. Well, anyway, we let's switch gears completely away from the Canadians and the Canadian division. And let's go to our guest who is on with us right now, as I see him on our Zoom, right? So he's right here, is John Hines. John, good to see you. How you doing? You enjoying the playoff race now, huh?
Yeah, it's great, Dan. Thanks for having me on. It's good to be able to talk to you again. And it's been real fun. You know, I think the last 6 weeks or so, we've been playing some good hockey, and nice to see the guys get rewarded for the hard work that, you know, that we've put in. And it's been exciting. You're playing meaningful hockey down the stretch, and a lot of meaningful games, tight games. So it's been fun. We got a big one on Saturday too.
Will you even be able to tell the difference if and when the playoffs start from what you've done for the last 4 to 6 weeks? And if so, like, it would be 3 months of playing what we call playoff hockey, which is different than regular season hockey. And it seems to me that's an incredible toll. How do you manage all of that?
Yeah, it's a good point, Sean. I think there really hasn't been, you know, a difference. I probably would say that maybe the biggest difference between what we've gone through the last 3 to 4 weeks, 5 weeks, you could possibly say, I think the intensity level that you have to play with, and, you know, obviously the importance of every game, because you're trying to climb back into the standings, that, you know, I think your mental focus and the mental energy you have to bring every night, as well as how hard we need to play to be successful, is something that is very similar to playoff hockey. And I also think the results are very similar to playoff hockey. Whether you win or lose the game, you do really have to take some quick lessons out of it, but you can't get too high with a win, and you can't get too low, because, you know, the next game's, it feels like the next game is always the biggest game of the year for a while. So that's a big part of it. I think that we've been a little bit fortunate here that, you know, the last 3 weeks we've played basically every other day. We had 2 days off between Chicago and the Florida series. And now we've had 3 days between the Florida, and then we play Dallas. So, you know, that's actually been helped, that just how the schedule set up, where we've actually been able to give the guys some days off. And I think, you know, you've seen them just come back mentally, physically refreshed. But I think the big thing is just the mental and emotional part. They're kind of refueled and ready to go. And we've tried to use that time wisely to keep the energy and the focus up.
So what do you think has been the difference? I mean, because it wasn't that long ago, John, that we were talking about the Nashville Predators and saying, could they be a seller at the trade deadline? And then all of a sudden, you guys turn it around. You climb your way into this playoff race. You're in a position to make it. What has changed with your team that also, in the process of all this, has dealt with some injuries to some very significant players?
Yeah, I think there's a couple pointed things, Dan. I'd say first and foremost, in the beginning of the year, we didn't work the right way, particularly our forward group. Just the intensity level in this league that you have to play in forechecking situations, winning puck battles in the offensive zone, tracking pucks. If there's a turnover in the offensive zone, reloading and get above the puck. So it's, you know, you can play more as a five-man unit. And we didn't have the consistent competitiveness, you know, willing to play to the structure that it takes to win. And that's been a big difference. And also, I think guys here understanding a little bit more that, you know, how hard you play without the puck allows you to play with the puck more and be a harder team to play against. So that's probably the 5-on-5 game. And culturally, that's been the biggest change. Our special teams significantly improved. Our power play and our penalty kill really have improved from the beginning of the year during this stretch that we've gone through, which has allowed us to be successful there and win games. And our goaltending has been very consistent. And I think that those three combinations, you know, I think has allowed us to get traction, be a harder team to play against, have a lot more substance to our game. And that's something that, you know, we do take pride in. I think we all understand those components are big factors in us winning. And then it's just been try to be really consistent in those areas.
And you said your goaltending's been consistent. I would say that it's been spectacular at times, and a lot of that's been UC Saros. What have you seen from him over the last month and a half, where he's really kind of, you could argue statistically, along with Vasilevskiy, he's been the best goalie in the league.
Yeah, in the beginning of the year, he tried to make a couple changes to his in the offseason to his stance and a little bit of his equipment. And, you know, Juice is he's obviously not the biggest guy, but what makes him, he's a very good goalie, is he's really smart. His ability to read and anticipate plays is high end. And he's also a goalie that needs to be on point, like square to the shooter. He's got to be positionally sound. And he was early in the year, he was a little bit on his toes. Like, he changed his stance and wasn't allowing him. It was almost hunched over a little bit more. So it wasn't allowing him one-on-one with the shooter to be as square up as he needs to be. And then also he wasn't in positions where he could push for his lateral plays, where he's been fantastic the last 3 to 4 weeks, and a lot of east-west plays or rebounds in those situations. So he's made some adjustments to those, and that's when he's playing his best hockey. And I think he's also gone through a learning experience. I mean, he was the backup for a long time. You know, the end of last season before the pause, he kind of took the reins a little bit and played more of the games. And that was an adjustment of understanding, how do you practice? How do you put away one game and be ready for the next one? You know, as a starter versus the backup, your whole day mindset, all those things change. And I think he learned that then. He learned it in the bubble in Edmonton. And then I think he's gone through that process and is much more comfortable and knows a routine to be a guy that can play more than he has in the past.
When you touch on some of the you know, specific stuff, the technical stuff of his stance, you know, and his push, what does that do when he's playing the way he is now? How does that impact the defenseman, you know, and how you guys want to then get the puck and quickly transition up? What is the way that the goaltender is playing right now? How does that impact the way then the skaters will play in front of him?
Well, the one thing is, you do try to be a little bit predictable in the way that you want to play in and around your net front. So, you know, you'd like to be able to, excuse me. And I think it's really how you play around your net front and your defensive zone coverage, that if you have some layers of defense, I think Juice feels comfortable with where he knows where the shots are going to come from. You know, he knows how guys are going to react because we've had much more commitment in that area. Our structure is much better. So that allows the goalie to be able to, a smart guy like him, to be able to anticipate where things are going to go, and that's helped. And then, you know, as he makes those saves, you want to be able to transition out of the D zone quick. And I think that the combination of the commitment we've had in the defensive zone, playing with more structure, I think it's allowed him to play his game better. And I think by him playing as well as he has, it also allows, I think, your D core and the rest of the team to have a lot of confidence in what we're doing.
You know, you spoke a little bit about the injuries and kind of how that derailed your team for a while. And then there was no movement at the trade deadline as you guys started to move up the standings and put yourself in a position where you could have an opportunity to play in the playoffs. Do you have any update on some of the guys that are coming back? You have Forsberg and guys like that. I would assume you just have to look at that almost as your own trade deadline acquisitions.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we have had a lot of guys out throughout the year, and I think it's been, I think the development system here in Nashville has been good, along with Milwaukee. You know, there's obviously been players when they can step in and play the way that they've played. We do play the same system. So I think guys are familiar. So when they come up and down, they're not so much worried about where I should be, but as opposed to coming in and playing their game to their identity as a player, and they just kind of fit in and you can plug and play. So I think that's really helped, that we've had some NHL ready players to be able to come in and the way that they work and the impact they've had on the team with their energy, their hunger, their talent. You know, they've really brought a lot of life and energy to the group. You know, I think it's been, you know, a pretty big part of the reason why we've been able to have some success. And as far as the guys that are out, I don't have a huge update. I think we might have a couple guys coming back, but it changes every game. It feels like we wind up getting an injury, and then it comes back and forth. But we do have some guys that possibly could be returning in the next week or so.
One guy that's back, the young guy, came from Milwaukee, Ellie Tolvanen. There's been a lot of hype around him in Nashville before you even got there, John. And it's been a patient waiting game for when he might come around, for when he might become the NHL player that the Predators were hoping he'd become. What are you seeing from him now? Why has he all of a sudden become that NHL player?
Well, I think you're right. He had a ton of hype coming in. I think some of that is, you know, what he did in Finland and also where you get drafted. As we all know, sometimes those expectations are, you know, sometimes not always in line with the player. But, you know, the thing with Tolvanen, he's a really smart player. He's got a great shot, good offensive instincts. But he was one of these guys that he wasn't like this physically, you know, genetically gifted guy that sometimes can come in to the NHL right away and play. Like he's had to work. He has to play both sides of the puck. I think he's really worked on his skating. He's a pretty complete player for a 21-year-old. You know, and I think what happened is he's really paid his dues. I credit the Milwaukee staff. They've really worked with him in his game and rounded it out. And now he's come into the NHL and he's a guy that can help you win in multiple ways. He's got a great shot. He's got good offensive instincts. He's responsible without the puck. He understands and values that part of the game. And the other significant factor for him is he's been very good on the power play. And we knew that coming in, but yeah. You know, he's got great instincts. He's got a great shot. He's been a big difference in our power play, being able to get up and running here during the stretch.
You mentioned you've had a couple of days off and you know, to get ready for what's a huge game against Dallas. So they're right behind you, 2 points, game or two in hand. What have you seen from Dallas and all the free time that you've had to kind of look around the league and do other things? What have you seen from Dallas, especially lately, and what do you expect when you face them?
Yeah, well, one, I think, you know, Jamie Benn's really heating up. Robertson's playing really well. You know, they're a team that, like, they're extremely competitive. They've got good size. I think they play to an identity that they have. They have a really strong D core. You know, they have size. They got great puck moving D. I think that D core cares about keeping the puck out of the net. You know, so they're a difficult team to play against. But what you've seen is, you know, their captain's really taking himself to another level and really leading the team. Pavelski's another guy that comes in and plays, you know, really well and extremely hard. Hintz is a guy, you know, for as much you hear about, he can't play back to backs and he's hurt and he's banged up. I mean, he's a factor in every game for them. And like I said, Robertson's coming in and really, really producing really well. So, I mean, they're a formidable team. I think at some point Sagan's going to be back, but I think Bonus has done a really good job with the group. They obviously have, you know, they're battle tested going to the cup final last year. And, you know, we know every time you play them, it's a pretty big rivalry with Nashville. And we know it's going to be not a lot of time and space on the ice. There's going to be some physicality in the game. And, you know, we're going to have to make sure that we're ready to compete at a high playoff level on Saturday night.
The games in hand, when a team you're trying to battle with for a playoff spot, the games in hand scare you as a coach? Like, Dallas has two in hand right now as we speak. They're going to play one of them tonight. Does that factor into your thought process at all as a coach when you look at the standings?
A little bit, just in the sense, as you said, I mean, you're just trying to look at different scenarios. I mean, I won't give you the ultimate coach to speak of, you know, we got to win our game. We do. Right. We have to win our games. I mean, it doesn't matter what they do. But, yeah, I mean, you're always looking at what happens. You know, they're going to play tonight, so you want to watch the game. Okay, what happens if they win, if they lose? How does it go? Because sometimes, too, you want to know what the tiebreakers may be. So, you know, I think that's your responsibility, too, to your team, to make sure that you know what the scenarios are going to be. So I don't necessarily, if you look at it differently, Dan, more than I think you need to be aware of all those scenarios. But it does ultimately come down to, you know, we have to make sure that we're taking care of our business first and foremost, but aware of the other components of it.
John, I'm going to take you out of your division and out of your team for a minute. Before you came on, we were looking at the North Division and talking a little bit. And obviously one of the talking points is Connor McDavid. As a coach, and I know you haven't seen him this year, but clearly you've seen him in the past. What's your appreciation for the fact that he could possibly score 100 points in 56 games this year? To me, it's just mind-boggling that could happen.
Yeah, I think when you see it from that perspective, you would think, yeah, it is mind-boggling. But I mean, seeing him play, coaching against him, you know, his speed, his the way that he competes, like he's a whole different dynamic when you're coaching against him, because lots of time, you know, his speed from his own zone or through the neutral zone coming back, like, okay, how do you cover it? How do you stay above him? How do you try to take it away? And then all of a sudden now you're talking to your D, how are you going to be able to defend the line rush against him when he takes it wide and goes around the net? And so he brings, just as an individual player with his speed and his offensive instincts and how hard he plays, you know, it's a different element that you have to be able to be prepared for. And sometimes, like any great player, you know that they're going to get looks in the game. Like, he's going to be a factor in the game, but how do you limit it? And then you always know you're going to need, be able to need some big saves against them. But well, he's a multi-threat, like even him on the power play, you know, it's 5-on-5, it's on the power play. And I've been following them a little bit too, you know, and I think they had some rough series early in the year. I think, well, against Montreal possibly, and Toronto.
Yeah.
I think these guys have him and Draisaitl, just, you know, the maturity of digging in and understanding that, you know, there's going to be some obstruction and they're going to get played hard and they got to play through it. And I mean, he's a dynamic guy. But I also think he's such, like, a, he's a hungry, driven, to be that talented with the hunger and the drive to be as successful as he can be. It's pretty impressive to watch.
He's ridiculous.
You know what? That sums it up even better right there.
All right. Last one for me, because another thing we were talking about before you came on was when you have two goalies, and we were looking at Vegas in particular, right? So in their 10-game winning streak, Lehner's 5-0 and Fleury's 5-0. But when you get to the playoffs, it's always been the idea you pick a guy and you ride that guy for as long as you think you can ride him. You have two goalies. I mean, Saros has been better than Pekka of late, but I mean, can it change? You know, can we're seeing more now with teams using two goaltenders. Can what we see in the playoffs then change? Like, can a coach then say, I'm going to rotate my guys in a playoff series, in a first round series, and see what happens? Like, can Pete DeBoer rotate those two guys and see what happens? Or is it more of a thing for a coaching perspective and a goaltending perspective that you pick a guy and that guy is comfortable and confident and he knows he's going to be in, and from a coach you have a little bit of predictability too?
Yeah. You know, I think probably a lot of different situations, but probably going into a playoff series, you'd want to have the guy that you feel is going to be the guy right away. And I think everyone has to be, particularly in the playoffs, comfortable with their role and understand, you know, the situations, because what you don't want to have is sometimes the stress of not knowing or creating additional stress with the team. So, you know, lots of times if you have two really good goaltenders that you feel like can play, like Pittsburgh did it, you know, when they won it, I think Sully changed goalies, mm-hmm. you know, in the middle of series at times, but you know, you go with one. And I think if you feel like the other guy can play well, sometimes it is timing. Is the player that's starting, is he playing at the level you feel can win the series, you know, or is it, do you feel like your team needs a little bit different momentum? What is his confident level going through, and what is your team? So, you know, I do think when you have two guys, it's probably harder to rotate in a playoff series to say we're going to go in and rotate it. But if you feel like, you know, there's a situation where a guy is struggling and you feel like the team needs it, or the goalie needs it himself, then it's got to be a comforting feeling to know that you can put a guy right in that you feel can win.
John, last one, and we'll let you go. This has been such a trying year in so many ways, and you know, a shortened season and a lot of the season played without fans. Now we're a couple of weeks from the playoffs. The weather's getting warmer. I'm sure it's beautiful in Nashville, and I wish I was there for some of it, but there's some fans in the stands. Is it starting to feel more like quote-unquote normal for you now?
Yes, it is. You know, particularly in Nashville. I mean, I know we've been in other buildings that have had fans, but you know, we're at like 33% capacity in the building, and it's loud. And I think it's, you know, even the fans that are back in the building, you can only imagine how excited they are to be in a little bit of a normal routine. But it does feel like that. The more buildings you go in, the more fans that you get. It does. I think it's exciting for the players, for the staff, for the fans themselves. And I think as we continue to move along here, it does get more and more normal. You still have the protocols away from the rink, testing every day, and the masks and the things that we have to do. But yes, I mean, when you get fans in the stands, the weather gets nice, you know, there's all these competitive games. It does start to feel better and better as it continues to go on here.
There's so many reasons I want to be in Nashville. The weather is probably not on the top of that list, by the way. So,
well, when you go downtown Nashville on a Friday afternoon, if you drive through it, it's no different.
Yeah, it's no different. There you go. Hey, John, thanks so much for hopping on with us. Really appreciate it. Good luck the rest of the way. We'll be watching, talking about it, and writing about it. All right.
All right. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Be well.
Sean, I love getting to talk to John Hines. He's got a lot to say. He's honest, like I was said before he came on, and I learned a lot from him about his team and how they've managed to really, you know, catapult themselves back into this playoff race and be in a position where that game on Saturday against Dallas is huge. Dallas, you know, obviously has the games in hand. The Nashville Predators have a 2-point lead. What a big game that is going to be, right?
Yeah, it's going to be huge. And you know what I thought was interesting? A, he didn't give coach speak when you asked about the Dallas Stars. Like, he actually broke it down. Like, while their captain's really good, you know, their D cares about keeping the puck out of the net. It wasn't just like, oh, they're a good team. You know, he gave you an honest answer of what he sees when he sees the Dallas Stars. But what struck me is, if you walked in the middle of that question and you didn't hear the question and you just heard the answer, he's talking about the Nashville Predators. Right. Yeah. Their captain's right. Leading the way, and Roman Josi leads the team in scoring. You know, he's got the big veteran guys, a guy like Victor Arvidsson, that just, you know, or Matthias Ekholm, that just have this unbelievable will to win. Some of their guys, like Hintz, are held together by duct tape. He's got a great goalie in Soros, you know, and they're just a pain in the neck to play against. So to me, they're such similar teams. And then the other thing is, you know, you asked about Tolvanen, and then you look at Dallas, and they got Jason Robertson, who every day makes a stronger and stronger case for the Calder Trophy. I don't know if he'll win it, because he had so much ground to make up. I mean, we've crowned Kaprizov since the first day of the season, you know, when he had that first big game. Oh, there's your Calder Trophy winner. Yeah. But Robertson, he's climbing every day, and to the point, you know, Kaprizov speaks maybe once a month, and he does it through a translator as he still gets comfortable with the English language, you know, where he said that this guy's motivating me. Like, I don't want to think about the Calder Trophy, but I can't get away from it because of social media or anything. But I look and I know I have to do better, because I have this guy that's right on my tail and pushing me. And that's when races like that become awesome. And, you know, it's something for the last 2.5 weeks of the season, where it's going to be, I did this, now you have to do this. And I think players love it. I know I love it. I would assume all fans love it. And because it's just an added storyline, but Jason Robertson's just playing lights out hockey right now.
Yeah. And I'm glad we're talking about this, because, as you know, I'm working on a story on Jason Robertson right now, and spoke to him actually yesterday, Wednesday. And I asked him about the Calder race. And one of the things he did say was, he goes, look, I think it would be a disservice to my team and my teammates if I said I was focused on it, because we're focused on winning hockey games and making the playoffs. But he looks at it, he thinks about it. It's not on the forefront of his mind, but he knows if he keeps producing at the rate he's producing, that he's got a good shot at it. And it's something that at the beginning of the season, like you touch on with Kaprizov, like, we anointed him the Calder guy after a couple of games, maybe one game, you know, at the beginning of the season for Robertson. He played in two games, barely played 7 minutes in one, barely played 11 minutes in the other. And then he was on the taxi squad for five. And then he came back and he wasn't great. And he guy only had a handful of points in the first, number of games. And now all of a sudden, you know, really since March came on, beginning of March, he has been just lights out better. He's been better in terms of production than Kaprizov. You know, he's got 34 points since March 4th, you know, and that's, you know, that's incredible. And it's a plus 14 rating, and he's averaging over 18 minutes a night. He's right there. And the biggest factor, I think, and maybe the biggest factor in Dallas's push here, is that production that they're getting from a guy that they weren't expecting it from, right? You expect Jamie Benn to be there and producing. You expect Joe Pavelski and John Klingberg and Miro Heiskanen to be very good. Now you have this other guy come along, and a guy's like John Hines have to focus on him too. And that makes a huge difference for the Dallas Stars. And now they not only have to focus on Jason Robertson, they have to game plan around trying to shut this guy down, which opens it up for Jamie Benn, which opens it up for Joe Pavelski, which makes it Roope Hintz better. I mean, all of those things, they all come together when you got a guy who wasn't expected to do what he's doing at this age, 21 years old, and especially with the start of the season he's having, doing what he's doing right now.
Yeah, and confidence is key. I mean, you look at that last game, he scored again, and he was just in the right place. The puck's bouncing around in crease, and, you know, in he comes, and he's not panicked, and he just kind of tucks it in and, you know, doesn't hit a pad, doesn't hit the goalie in the chest. I mean, how many times have you seen players,
right,
you know, with these goals that they could have, and that, you know, whether it's luck or, you know, nerves or whatever it is, they put it right in the logo. And he doesn't do that. Like the confidence that he's playing with is otherworldly right now. And you know, you want to see him do that on the biggest stage. Like, to me, that race is going to be the biggest talking point for the next 2 weeks, just because of all that it means, right? Like, does Nashville get in and all the storylines that they have? Does Dallas get in and defending champs? And, you know, you want to talk about a team that you don't want to play.
Oh, yeah.
The Dallas Stars are a team you do not want to play. And they have a couple of games against Carolina. Dallas does left that's going to sort out the standings, not only whether Dallas makes it, but the rest of that division, which is just criminally good, right? I mean, you got Carolina, you got Florida, and oh yeah, you have the defending Stanley Cup champion, Tampa Bay Lightning, all hanging around right within one another. And, you know, you don't know how they're going to sort out. And then you kind of have these two teams at four playing cat and mouse. And when both of them are healthy as a one, there's no reward there. No. You're either getting the best goalie in the league right now in UC Soros. Statistically, he's been better than anybody for the second half of the year. Or you're getting the defending Western Conference champion who's finally getting healthy and has that mindset that they know they can beat anybody, including the Tampa Bay Lightning. And wouldn't they love to see Tampa finish first? They finish fourth and they get a shot at them in the first round.
Look at it. Isn't it interesting, though? I mean, you look at three of the four divisions. That one versus four is like, oh, thanks, great. We finished one. Now, in the West, we may have to play St. Louis. Oh, you know, they just won the Stanley Cup a couple of years ago. Or in the East, we may have to face the Boston Bruins. Oh, by the way, they lost in the Stanley Cup final a couple of years ago, and they're a championship team, obviously. Or the New York Rangers, who are streaking right now. Or the New York Islanders, who went to the Eastern Conference final last year. You know, and then in the Central, you finish first. You're Carolina. You're rolling. You love it. Oh, now we got to face maybe the Dallas Stars, who are, you know, the defending Western Conference champions. It's really the only one in the North. You're like, if you're Toronto, you're like, all right, we'll take Montreal. You know, that's the way it is right now. But it's no reward if you finish one in these other three divisions in the United States.
No, and that's what makes it great. I mean, that's what we thought was going to happen in this once in a lifetime alignment. And for the most part, it's happened. I mean, the races have been incredible. I thought possibly there were more teams would be involved, but I think as you see the math play out, it had to somewhat play out this way just because of the number of times you're playing a team. And if you dominate that team, you're going to put them out of the race, right? Like, if you know, it's just the nature of every game being a 4-point game. So it's going to be great. And you know, the East is wild too. I mean, when you think about it, who would have thought that the Rangers would be in this conversation? And the Rangers, and you know this better than I, because you cover them all the time, they're like plus 34 in goals, and they might not make the playoffs. I can't remember the last time a team with that big of a goal differential didn't make the playoffs. And, you know, I guess part of it comes down to a really poor stretch here and there where they weren't good. And you looked at them and you were like, oh my God. But I'll tell you two things. One, if I'm Boston, I'm really nervous, or any of those other teams, because they're all so close. Like, we keep saying Boston, but any of those teams could fall out in the next week. And two, and it's not going to happen because there's been so many really good coaching jobs, but David Quinn, not a bad coach.
Not a bad coach, that Rhode Islander, right, Sean? Look,
even if his players don't understand him, he's not a bad coach.
In regards to the Rangers, this is what happens when you start slowly. You have to chase. If they didn't have a slow start, Mika Zibanejad had such a poor start. The team had a poor start. They couldn't get their offense going. Defensively, they were fine. They couldn't get their offense going. Now, all of a sudden, you can't stop them. Zibanejad scoring every game. Panarin's been terrific. Adam Fox is lights out. Absolutely belongs in an Norris Trophy conversation. Alexi Lafreniere is producing. He's heating up, playing now on the top line. Shesterkin is clearly their number one and has played like it. There's so much good, but just you start slow and you have to chase. But when we talk about who they're chasing, and you mentioned the Bruins, Sean, they're chasing the Islanders. That to me is who they're chasing, because the Bruins, I don't believe, are going anywhere. And they have a bit of a more favorable schedule too. And they do play, they have games in hand, and they play the Rangers twice. But the Islanders have lost three in a row. They're going to play the Rangers at the Garden tonight, Thursday night. They're going to play the Rangers at Nassau Coliseum on Saturday. If the Rangers win both of those games, they're only 1 point behind the New York Islanders. To me, the team that's most vulnerable is the Islanders, not necessarily the Bruins. And there's question marks about their offense right now. Yeah, they put up six against the Rangers not long ago, but they've scored one or fewer. They've been shut out twice and scored one goal six other times in their last 14 games. Offense has been a problem. Defensively, I think they're going to be fine. Offense has clearly been a problem for them. So these next two games, or at least Thursday night, the game tonight, I don't remember a bigger game that the Rangers have played under David Quinn, right? You know, unless you count the qualifiers, you know, in again, when they played Carolina. But they're right there. They're chasing them. Now let's see what they're made of, because they did a really good job against Buffalo, the Devils, and the Flyers, going 7-1 in those games, 6-0 against the Devils and the Sabres. Those are games you have to win. They did win them. But now let's see what they're really made of, because they faced the Islanders two times, the Capitals two times, and the Bruins two times.
Wait, the Islanders can't score?
They're struggling right now.
Didn't somebody say that last week and was told that, oh, well, they just need to get the matchups?
Watch them score five tonight. They could. Yeah,
maybe, but I think you're seeing a consistent role of what I'm saying. Like, put that into a playoff series, right? So they score six. Cool, they win.
They score zero.
They lose. They score one, they lose. They score zero, they lose. Yeah. Now you're down 1-3 in a best of seven series. Like,
I understand
that inconsistency of being able to score, I think, is nightmarish in a playoffs. Like, if you can't count on two or more goals in a playoff game, you got some serious problems. Yeah. A, your fingers are crossed that your goalie is going to be unbelievable, and B, that you're going to get some puck luck, and C, if you're playing a team that can score, that you're going to shut them down to the point that two goals is going to win. It's a tightrope. And again, you know, Barry Trotz can walk it for sure. I mean, he's proven it over and over again, but it's not one that I would enjoy trying to traipse across Niagara Falls on.
No. And the Rangers clearly can score. So it is, you know, I think it's dicey for the Islanders. I really do. Now they come out again, these next two games against the Rangers, play well, get some points out of it, get some distance, and you're okay. You know, you're okay there. But again, I go back to it for the Rangers perspective. You start slow, you end up chasing. And this is the lesson. If at the end of the season, they don't make it, they fall a little bit short, which is, you know, I mean, the trend right now where they would be. You look back at the start of the season and you say, guys, next year, we better start better than we did last year. I mean, we can't start slowly. You can't have these trip ups early where you have to go find yourself and do all these things. You know, Mika Zibanejad, whatever it may have been, whether it was the COVID or whatever he had, you can't start slow, you know, and expect that you're going to make it up enough to be able to make the playoffs all the time. You know, we're seeing Dallas or Nashville, that one of them's going to get in after starting slow, but, you know, we'll see how that all goes. But from the Rangers' perspective, it was a poor start. It's been a great finish so far.
Yeah, but throw this year out. I mean, you couldn't control your start just because things were crazy. Like,
right.
You didn't know who's going to play, you know. And then you only have a 56-game runway. So mm-hmm. Five games in, you're already in trouble. So I think, sure, you learn the lesson. But I think also whoever falls short is going to be like, we would have made it.
We would have made
82 games, we would have made it. So, you know, but then to me, you look at the top and it's almost as interesting, right? So you have Washington, and, you know, Ovi's not going to play again. So this is three games that he hasn't played. And I thought it was really strange the other day that Peter Laviolette came out on the radio and said, don't worry, this isn't going to stretch into the playoffs. Like, it's day to day. The playoffs are 3 weeks away. Like, why
said
would
that
you
about Stamkos last year, by the way?
Yeah, why would you why would you even put that thought in people's heads if it's day to day? Like, so you really wonder when Ovi's coming back and at what level he's going to be. Two rookie goaltenders that have been very good for them, but you wonder what's going to happen down the stretch. Pittsburgh's 1 point behind him. Malkin's on the road trip. He's taking contact. He's going to come back soon. Sidney Crosby's just been playing out of his tree, but then Malkin comes back. Malkin comes back and he just turns back to superhuman instead of extraterrestrial superhuman. And, you know, and then Bruins. The Islanders, like you talked about, and then here come the Bruins.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's rate the trade deadline. And, you know, we talked about Taylor Hall. Like, who are you going to put ahead of him?
Well,
for trade deadline acquisitions. Like, this was a home run beyond home runs. Like, not, it just, look, he scored again in the last game they won, but he's like a different player. Like, he's doing things that didn't happen in Buffalo for whatever reason, whether he wasn't required to do them or didn't feel like doing them or wasn't motivated to do them. Like, I think a playoff chase, and I think that room has woken him up, and you know, look, you got to see it in the playoffs, and I'm not ordaining him as back to MVP level Taylor Hall, but he's a more than serviceable player in the Bruins lineup right now.
Well, you remember the playoff chase with the Devils several years ago, and he was the Hart Trophy winner in that. You know, he's motivated by a playoff chase. This guy doesn't make the playoffs very often, you know, and it looks certainly looks good for him to make it, you know, this year. But also, you talk about what he's doing now and what's different. David Krejci helps, you know, like he didn't have David Krejci in Buffalo. And the idea was to play with Jack Eichel. Jack Eichel started the season hurt and never was really Jack Eichel. He was never healthy. So to me, he's a different player because of the playoff race. He's a different player because he was playing with motivation, contract. He orchestrated the trade to Boston, so he better produced when he orchestrated a trade to Boston. There's a lot of things there. I look at the Boston Bruins and I think that they can be a machine again in the playoffs. You know, I really do. And the other good news for Boston is Brandon Carlo's on the mend. They need him. And Tuukka Rask has been really good. Are they the best team in the East? It's hard to say. I think it's hard to say between those, you know, between all of them, to be honest with you. But no matter where they finish, 1 through 4, would not be surprised if the Boston Bruins end up as the team coming out of the East.
No, I wouldn't be surprised with that either. I think they might be the most complete team. And, you know, when you look at goaltending and goaltending being such an important part of what happens, I mean, Tuukka Rask has been won 4 or 5 games since he's come back from his latest injury, and he just looks fantastic. I mean, he looks like a goalie that could take you deep. And then, you know, we talk about goalie decisions. To me, the other one that's going to be amazing is, you know, Bruce Cassidy kind of hinted the other day that Jeremy Swayman's his number two. He's had the best tandem in hockey for the last 3 years. You know, Yaroslav Halak played last year in the playoffs when Tuukka opted out, and certainly wasn't the reason why they lost. You know, played well, and everybody's kind of held up that tandem as that's what we would love to have. Tuukka's the clear number one, but not a huge drop off to Halak. And now, again, 2 weeks before the playoffs starts, here comes a coach almost unprompted saying, well, right now, you know, Halak's behind the curve. You know, he had COVID. Yeah. We have a lot of games. We haven't really gotten him to play. So Swayman's our number two. And then he kind of walked away from it and said, you know, things could change in the next 2 weeks. But for right now, here's a kid who's played 5 NHL games. He's my number two. And he's one step away from, you know, Tuukka getting hurt again, being the guy. And that completely changes their fortunes. But he certainly had an unbelievable start.
We'll see if Tuukka were to get hurt again, we'll see if it's Swayman or not. We'll see if Bruce will hold up his end of the bargain on that comment, you know, or go to the veteran who he probably has a lot more trust in. Anyway, a couple of news and notes before we get out of here, Sean. So TNT, Turner Sports, the NHL completed its media rights agreements for the next 7 seasons, starting next season with Turner Sports. TNT is going to have the Stanley Cup final in 2023, 2025, and 2027. They're going to get the Winter Classic in all 7 years of the deal. And they're excited. I was on the press conference, the virtual press conference, you know, that, you know, to announce the deal. And you can definitely tell the excitement that TNT has. And the thing that I'm most excited about this deal is what the studio show can offer, because inside the NBA, I'm not an NBA guy. I know you're not an NBA guy, but that's an entertaining studio show. And it's lively, it's fun, it's dynamic, it's got, you know, star power. And it's not a knock on NBC. I think NBC does a fine job, but I'm very excited to see what TNT with their model can do with an NHL studio show.
Yeah, and I just think new blood, right?
Like, yeah, new blood.
That's nothing's off the table, and clearly they have a model that they believe in. And I know there's been talk about getting some really high-end Hall of Fame type players to be a part of that, much in the way that they do with basketball with Shaq and Charles Barkley.
Barkley's got to be involved, by the way.
And then the NHL show for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, two things on that. Like, again, I think the new blood is going to help. And, you know, I think we would be remiss because we've had so many of them on our show since we started doing our show. You know, the NBC guys have been great. The NBC people have been great.
Yeah.
Men and women. And, you know, this is always an awful part of business of any kind, right? You see layoffs, you see, you know, your friends in newspapers and stuff like that having to pivot and go on to other things because of just the way the business is. And, you know, now that's going to happen for some people in NBC, and I hope, you know, a lot of them end up in new places with ESPN or TNT or someplace else, because there's certainly a lot of hockey talent that NBC's amassed and really deserves a voice going forward.
No, 100%. Brian Boucher has been great when we've had him on. He's one of my favorites. Keith Jones, same way. Patrick Sharp, we've had him on. No, I mean, they're terrific. You know, they really are. They're great hockey voices and great hockey minds. And even if you have a fun and dynamic studio show and all that, you need the hockey voice. You need the hockey mind, I believe, you know, to speak to the viewers as well. So definitely hope they get an opportunity. And maybe this guy's going to get an opportunity that we'll talk about next, because he's a very good talker too, right? Ryan Miller's announcing his retirement. 18 seasons. He's going to retire as the all-time leader among United States-born goaltenders. He's got 390, all-time leader in wins. He's got 390 right now. I mean, what a career. Like, this guy had a marvelous career. He was the best. I think he was named the best goalie in the AHL, the NHL, the Winter Olympics, and the NCAA. The only guy to do that.
Yeah, no, and it's just fantastic. And he played in Buffalo, and certainly got his due there. That's a vibrant hockey market, but it's a smaller market. And he's played in some smaller markets. He hasn't gotten the higher profile that some other goalies that maybe aren't as good as him have gotten playing in bigger markets. Look, I was at those 2010 Olympics.
So was I, sitting right next to you.
Yeah, and my God,
he was great.
Like, the only tournament that I might have seen that's been better than that was Tim Thomas in the playoffs,
right,
with the Bruins the year they won. That was completely
different, totally different, but
otherworldly.
Yeah.
But Ryan Miller was the reason that they got to overtime, mm-hmm, of the gold medal game, and you know, was one iconic, unbelievable goal away from perhaps that collection of talent for the Americans wearing gold medals. And you want to talk about revisionist history and what that would be like. You think about some of the guys that are on that team that would have had a goal to show off to everybody and make sure that it was never forgotten. It could be completely different, but to me, you know, being a goaltending guy, like, Ryan Miller's always been one of those guys that you just look at and you're like, he does everything right. Like, and he's competitive, and his personality belies all that. Just calm, cool, never really talks about himself. You know, even retiring, like, he's just kind of doing it and getting it out of the way, and he's going to go on with his life. There's no huge, you know, pomp and circumstance. It's just like, oh yeah, by the way, I'm not going to play next year, and let's finish out this year, and I don't want anybody to really do that much about it. So, you know, good on him, and he certainly won't lack for things to do in retirement, whether it's TV or anything else he wants to do. The guy has 100 million interests and is one of the most interesting people that I've ever met in this game.
He's one of the most articulate guys I've ever interviewed in this game. There's no question about it. And it's actually, I mean, I don't know what he wants to do, but I think he'd be terrific in TV. You know, I think this is an opportunity for the people at Turner Sports and for the people at ESPN to go to a guy, and he's known as the best goalie of all time in the United States with his wins. and he's well known. I mean, this is not a no name. He's a well known guy, and very articulate, knows the game backwards and forwards, as most goalies do. And I think he would be great on TV. So maybe that's going to be in his future. Who knows? But a terrific career for Ryan Miller, you know, that will end at the end of this season. And a terrific podcast by us today, by the way, Sean, I think.
Yeah, except for you forgot one thing. One, maybe Ryan Miller plays for the Americans in the World Championships and extends his career a little bit.
I don't see it, but
there's a possibility. And speaking of the Worlds, Gerard Gallant, going to coach Canada.
Welcome little, back.
Even though he says it's not an audition, it's clearly a little audition, a little reminder of what he can do. I mean, you're talking about a guy who took Vegas to the Stanley Cup final in his rookie year. And, you know, speaking of coaches, before we go, there's a man named Bob Hartley, used to coach in the league, won a Stanley Cup. You know, you're talking about Ryan Miller winning at every level. So Bob Hartley has won in the Q. He's won in the A. He's won in the N. And he's won in the Swiss League. And now he's won in the K.
Yeah.
His team, with Kovalchuk on it,
yeah,
won the championship of the KHL, the Gagarin Cup, this week. So that's five championships in five different leagues for Mr. Hartley.
Man can coach.
I wonder, is there a team that needs somebody that can coach?
Yeah.
Is there an opening? There's one in Seattle. And will there be other openings at the end of this year?
There will be.
Odds say there will.
There will be. Absolutely.
I wonder if Bob's phone rings. If I was a GM, I might give him a little jingle.
Maybe. You know, maybe. What about, though, you mentioned Seattle before you got out here, Sean. I mean, could Gallant do it again? You think he'd be interested in doing the whole expansion thing again?
Yeah. I think that's an unbelievable opportunity. And it's so not too. It's not, you know, again, Bob Hartley coached the Atlanta Thrashers. It's not coaching the Atlanta Thrashers. Like, you're going to get an NHL team. Mm-hmm. You're going to be given the pieces of being competitive right away. And, you know, I think there's a huge piece of Gerard Gallant in the way that some of his tenures have ended, where he wants to do it again. And he wants to stick it to everybody who dismissed him when maybe he shouldn't have been dismissed.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's part of what motivates him. And, you know, you look at what Seattle's done already, just the excitements that's there and the way they've handled all their buildup and everything else. Like, it looks like it's going to be a first class organization, much like Vegas was coming in. They're putting, you know, huge amount of resources behind it. Great market. Like, you get to live in Seattle. I'd sign up.
Yeah. And then, I mean, you have Seattle.
Maybe they should call me. I can coach.
You got Seattle. What's going to happen in Buffalo? What's going to happen with John Tortorella in Columbus? I think we're going to have a few things to talk about at, you know, more than just the playoffs, Sean, when the playoffs do roll around, because you got all these other teams that aren't being involved and they'll be making some decisions too. So we'll get there soon. First, though, a lot of playoff races to focus on. A lot of excitement still left to go as we wind down the regular season. Thank John Hines for getting on with us today and giving us the breakdown of the Predators and the Dallas Stars. And Sean, we'll do it again next week.
It's going to be a huge match on Saturday. I can't wait. The space on the couch is already reserved. And we'll whip a little something up and watch 2.5 hours of just fantastic hockey that's going to go a long way in determining what the playoffs look like in the Central. So it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, it'll be good. There's a lot of good games coming up. So enjoy them, and everybody stay safe.